Hey, it's George Grumbacher, founder and chief community officer of Money Alignment Academy, president of financial consulting professionals, and the host of the Money Savage podcast, focused on helping people get better at money so they can live how they want. And I know a thing or two about sales. If you want to learn about how to transform your sales team from order takers to quota breakers, significantly increase your revenue, and create scalable sales systems, you should be listening to the Authentic Persuasion Show with my good friend, Jason Cutter.
Welcome to the Authentic Persuasion Show, a place where business and thought leaders come to weigh in on important sales-related topics that you can use in your sales career and life. I'm your host, Jason Cutter. My mission is to get your help in changing sales from something prospects fear to an act of service they actually seek out and appreciate. Whether you're in sales, leading sales teams, or own a business, I hope this helps you improve your selling effectiveness and you can go out into the world as an authentic persuader. Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Authentic Persuasion Show. My special guest today is George Grumbacher. George is the founder and chief community officer of Money Alignment Academy, the president of financial consulting professionals, and the host of the Money Savage podcast. He helps people get better at money so they can live how they want. George, welcome to the Authentic Persuasion Show.
Well, thanks for having me, Jason.
I am excited to have you here, especially because I am now a two-time guest on your podcast, which I absolutely love. And one of the things that's been fun in developing our relationship as just connecting, networking, and then being on your show and then you being here is the fact that there's times when I'm looking at my own podcast and I'm thinking, I'm doing 5 days a week. I should do more. And I tell people that and they think I'm crazy. I'm thinking I should do 7, maybe 10 days a week. Like, I'm thinking I'm lazy and other people are thinking that I'm absolutely crazy to do what I do. And then I chat with you a month or so ago and you're doing what, 8 episodes a week? And then you were going to ramp that up as well.
Yeah. Right now we're doing 8 episodes a week. And I said, you know what? 8's good. 10 would be better. And then I thought, no, that's too much. But then literally as of the last couple of days, Jason, I'm leaning back towards doing 10 the last part of the month and into the new year. So you got one crack at this deal, go around the track one time. So what am I holding back from?
Yeah, you might as well do it. It go all the way. And I appreciate that again. I think I'm doing a great job. And then I think, man, I should step it up. Thanks to people like you. So where I want to start with this is you focus on money. You help people generate wealth, create wealth, deal with their finances. That's what your podcast is all about. I love your Money Savage show and all the things you deal with, right? So you have a wide range of guests talking about money in different aspects. Mindset is really big for you. Where did this come from? Where did this passion about money and wealth and helping people, like what created this inside of you?
Well, it was all the adversity that I faced as a young person. The odds were stacked against me. That's not true. I had a very, very, very nice childhood in a very, very middle-class environment. So no odds stacked against me, no terrible adversity, no tragedy. What I am is a very hardworking and disciplined person. And growing up, I had no idea what I wanted to do. So it wasn't like I had a passion for personal finance. Always wanted to feel like whatever I was doing was meaningful. Always wanted to have an impact and to do work that I thought was important. Thought I was going to be a lawyer, Jason, and thank God I did not go that route. No offense to lawyers out there. I just would have been a really unhappy lawyer. And so when I graduated college, it was time to get a job and I just happened into financial service. Sold life insurance for New York Life for 7 years, which was great. But it took probably 13 years into my professional career for everything to finally click and to discover that right now, I feel like I am doing something for people, benefiting people, as opposed to doing something to people and selling to them. And now I'm coming up on my 20th year here in 2021 and feel like I'm finally really doing the work that I'm supposed to be doing and starting to have the impact that I really want to have. So,
was there a shift, like any tangible point you can identify where you made that shift from selling something to or doing something to somebody to with or for somebody?
Yeah, I think literally that is within the past probably 5 years. And I always doing work and selling insurance and selling financial services to people that would not otherwise have had them. And to then have people die that I sold them life insurance to be able to pay death benefits. I mean, that's a real impact and that is good work, but I still didn't feel like I was sort of talking myself into it and coaching myself up every day to go out and do 100% full-time professional sales, right? It's prospecting 24/7 when you're selling life insurance and you're talking to people about stuff that they don't want to talk about and all that. And so I just never felt really awesome about it. Like it was not lighting me up by any stretch of the imagination. And I don't know really why, but I didn't really feel like I was worthy and that the value that I was bringing was really legitimate, no matter how hard I tried to convince myself of the fact. And it did take really recognizing that I have a good voice, not this amazing podcast voice that you're hearing, Jason, but I do have something to say, and I am really able to have an impact through my own creation versus selling a company's products. So that was really the shift, is when I moved away from the insurance company world and started my own financial firm and moved more towards, just to get a little technical, into the fee-based world and now doing podcasting and also the educational platform that I created. So
I love it. And it's interesting to hear you talk about that shift where you felt like, I wouldn't say struggle, but you had to motivate yourself every day. You had to go out there and do that sales grind, that prospecting grind, even after so many years. I mean, if I'm doing the math right, you said this hit you about 5 years ago, you're 20 years in. It means you did that for, we're talking 15 years of some kind of cycle like that. And obviously you're still selling stuff at the time, insurance benefits, something valuable to those people who really need it. And then shifting to this. So it wasn't like you were selling crap to somebody who didn't need it at all. There was some value, but it's interesting to hear you make that shift where just that, even that wasn't fulfilling enough.
Yeah, it was I think calling it a struggle and grind is incredibly appropriate. I literally had to pump myself up every single day and felt like I would need to do something mildly heroic on a daily basis. So thinking about it in terms of that, it was not the right fit for me because it was such a struggle.
Why do you think that was such a struggle? Was it because it just didn't feel like it was an alignment for something that felt like what you wanted to be doing?
Yeah, I think it's a combination of that. And I remember reading this, gosh, I'm not going to be able to remember what the title of it was, but fundamentally, this gentleman gave this really famous speech. And he said that if you're going to be successful in this industry, you better get used to talking to people who don't want what you sell, or just something along the lines of that in order to be successful, you have to talk to people who don't want to talk to you about something that they don't want to talk about. And I think I just had this in my head that nobody wants to talk to you. So therefore, it's going to be really hard to set every meeting. And when you're there, it's going to be sort of like ripping teeth out. And I don't know if that's really true or not. So there might be some life insurance agents or professional advisors that sell insurance that can correct my thought process, but that's just what it was day in and day out. And again, it was fine, but it was not one of those things that, what would this look like if it were easy kind of a thing. It was every day, I need to go get my hard working boots on and get out there.
Yeah. I mean, with that kind of perspective outlook long-term, it's definitely tough. I mean, there's something to be said about patience, but if you were doing it for a long enough time and it still was feeling like that, then that makes total sense. Now, let's shift a little bit into talking about sales. Obviously, you've dealt with a lot of selling in your time and then probably dealt with people, other salespeople, seen what works, what doesn't work. One of the things we had chatted about before was just a lack of training, processes, and management. So tell me what you generally see. I mean, where are companies just missing the mark, and or what can they do to help their sales teams be more effective?
Yeah. So I think that I mentioned I spent 10 years with New York Life. I'm technically a retired New York Life agent and 4 years with MassMutual. And so 7 years as an agent with New York Life, 3 years in management, and then 3 years in management with MassMutual. And you can include Northwestern Mutual in there, but those are the three biggest mutual life insurance companies out there, the three biggest agency systems. So they have a vested interest and they have devoted a lot of resources to recruiting people who are new to the industry, getting them trained up and managing them and helping them have a rewarding career in financial services. And fascinated by how on the outside looking in, they're financially very, very similar companies, but then on the inside, completely different. And what I've sort of big takeaways is that it's really hard for big companies like that to train people, just because, I mean, there's so many different ways to go about having a financial services practice, developing a financial services clientele. You can market so many different kinds of products and services to so many different kinds of people. So there's that. And then, unfortunately or fortunately, a lot of the folks that rise to the top of those models are really successful salespeople. So they don't necessarily have a background, and this is me also, in training, in development, in management. They're just great salespeople, which again is incredible. So it's this confluence of events where you then hand those guys and those gals a one-size-fits-all training program. They look at it and they say, well, this is crap. And then they go about trying to piece together what they think or what they had experience selling and what worked for them. And so obviously, as people are listening, they recognize, well, how in the world would a Fortune 100 company like that be successful? And the answer is, you know what? They're successful in spite of that disjointedness. And so that was what my experience was. And again, it was probably, to be fair to the excellent companies, I was in 5 different locations. So I saw that in 5 different locations. So,
well, and I think that a lot of times when I look at that kind of an organization, they're successful as a result of intense and all out recruiting efforts and playing the volume game, right? Like, of if you get enough people in, some are going to stick, and you get enough of them to stick and just willing to handle that attrition or that turnover, right? I mean, is that one of the things that you saw? It was just nonstop recruiting?
1,000%. Yeah. And I mean, unfortunately, the way that the compensation is set up is it's just an all-out blitz year after year. And you need to hit recruiting numbers. And we're talking a minimum of 7 or 8 new people, but the top folks would do like double digits every year. And so it's not an easy thing to do that while you're supposed to be managing and while you're supposed to be developing and everything else. So retention is a challenge across the industry. And it's just a function of, if you want to know why people are behaving the way that they're behaving, look at the way that they're being paid.
Yeah. Which I think it's always comes down to that, right? Like the compensation model, the incentives, what the focus on. I think one thing that's interesting that you shared, which I hadn't really seen that too much at a trainer level. I have seen it at a team lead level, which you pointed out, which is, here's this corporate training, here's this one size fits all. And then you've got this top salesperson who gets moved up into some kind of leadership role where they're bringing on people and then they're training them. And they're looking at this one size fits all manual and going, this is crap. This didn't work for me. Here's what worked for me. I'm going to train everyone my way. I'm going to do my own thing, which could work, except what they're doing is taking their training, their what works for them, turning that into their internal training process, their own one. And then if somebody doesn't fit who they are and their style and the way that they operate, it's also going to be a disconnect.
Yeah, that's 1,000% right. And think about it from the company's standpoint. They spend millions and millions of dollars developing these training processes and information and implementing everything and having systems to track it. And then they're doing that because they have obviously a compliance need to make sure that the people that are out there representing the company are saying what they expect them to say and they need them to say, and then they're not, and everything else. So yeah, it's really a lot of different challenges. But I think that you also hit the nail on the head. A lot of these places become cults of personality where the leader is extraordinary, inspirational, and dynamic human beings, and people want to be around them and they want to follow. And so they're successful. But then invariably what will happen is that person will move on because they did such a good job. And then
yeah,
you got to reshuffle the deck again. So
yeah, and that is always a challenge. Now, taking all of that you learned, taking the challenges that we just talked about, what have you done different with your personal business venture over the last 5 years? What have you focused on? Sales, marketing, business, personal development, team development. What does that look like? What lessons have you taken from that and go, here's what I'm going to do differently?
Yeah, well, I certainly recognized early on that if you're going to differentiate yourself in a very, very crowded marketplace, that you have to have a defined and very professional sales process. And I always wanted to view myself as a professional and as really as professional as possible. And I had a business partner who was incredibly sophisticated and had all the designations in the world. So he did the majority of the planning, and I did the majority of the new business development and the prospecting. When I moved into management, I recognized that this was going to be a numbers game at some level. While the top way to find a new financial services professional is by personal observation, so just I'm out in the world through introductions from my existing advisors, so referrals, but then it's possible to not take advantage of, at that time, websites like Career Builder and Hot Jobs and Monster.com. And so I would screen just hundreds of resumes on a weekly basis and do all these screening interviews and just throw them in the funnel. And when I was sourcing that many names and seeing that many people, it just demanded that I have really dialed in processes. So I would say the same thing in every first interview, every second interview, and every third interview. And then that bled into how I trained the people that I was working with to have a very defined process and how they collected information and presented information back. So that was extremely beneficial for me. And now today, as I am really in the process of staffing up and looking back and recognizing, okay, I want to be able to do the things that those big companies did, because I want to make sure that the people that are working with me are, again, representing my company in the right way, and the interactions that they have with the people that they're serving, that they're hitting all the right notes and having the appropriate conversations. So it's interesting that, to a degree, the shoe is on the other foot, but I'm going into it eyes wide open and understanding that it's going to be fluid, but you got to start as you mean to go. So
that is fascinating, where when you look at it from the outside or from a lower level in a large organization, like the ones that you were talking about a few minutes ago, where their processes, their one-size-fits-all training, the compliance, all that stuff seems like too much. I mean, you understand it, but that's not how you would do it if you had your own thing. And then to hear you talk about your evolution with your company and as that's growing, what you want to have as this consistent brand message, to have as a consistent recruiting strategy. Because I know that same feeling as well, where it's like, okay, we need to ask these questions every single time. We need to say these things in the interview process so we can set the right expectations about what's going to be made, how the job works, how hard it's going to be, you know, relative, so that people come on board in the right way. It's fascinating to hear that evolution for you on creating more and more structure and where that tipping point is from being manageable and helpful to everybody and seen as value to getting to the point where people, it's out of touch with the actual frontline people on your team.
Yeah. It's a matter of finding that sweet spot, Jason. So
always in this here, let's talk about the sales side. What have you found is most effective in your sales process, or how would you define your sales style after everything you've been through and seen and now where you're at?
Well, certainly just the natural order of things says that as you become more successful in an industry or just in life, that you don't need the sales quite as much as you used to. So that allows you to operate in, I think, a more authentic way. And that's certainly where I have the great fortune of being, that I know the kind of people that I'm interested in working with, and I know the kind of people that I'm not interested in working with, and I have the ability to make those decisions. And so you mentioned expectations a minute ago, and that's such an important part of any kind of a relationship. Certainly the sales process is being really upfront in what I'm hoping to get out of this interaction and what somebody can expect to get out of the interaction with me, and to really try to be clear in next steps and where we're going so that there's not any kind of confusion about it. And just being comfortable and having the, I guess it's just a matter of confidence and comfort, just to say, hey, you know what, this is kind of where we're at. You can take it or leave it, sort of a thing. So very much coming from a position of strength or abundance versus coming from a position of weakness or scarcity. I think that that's certainly one of the biggest changes where I'm at today versus where I was at when I was starting this 6, 7 years ago. And certainly when I was just getting started in the business, early 2000s.
One of the things that I find fascinating, and I'm curious at what your parameters are. I don't talk to a lot of people about this, but what is a type of person, or what are the parameters of somebody you don't want to work with?
The majority of my work is worksite. So I call on organizations to manage their retirement plan and or I do wellness, financial literacy training for companies. So if a company is just not interested in helping their employees to flourish, or they feel like it's not their role because they don't want to be matriarchal or patriarchal, then that's just not a good fit, because I am a strategy person at this stage of the game. I'm not just interested in plugging in different tactics or things. I want to take a really integrated approach to how an organization is going to be implementing a 401k or a financial wellness program. And so it needs to be an organization that wants to do that and appreciates the opportunity that they have to have a greater or more profound impact on the lives of their employees.
Makes total sense. And I can see that, especially the organizations that I talk to. Generally, if someone's not open, if someone's not looking forward to the change and knowing that things are going to have to change and openly supporting it, I can usually tell pretty quick. I'm like, this is not going to work. You're not going to like what I'm going to say. Even you hire me as a consultant and there's a bunch of things we need to do. If you're not totally on board with it, like as we agree on the strategy, but then we're going to move forward, then it's just never going to work. And it's a waste of time and money and energy. And I can see that from your side as well, where you want to have this integrated approach. They just want to check boxes, bring in some benefits, and say that they have them. Like, is that one of the things that you see where people
you just, got it? Yeah.
Yeah.
I wish that I were smart enough to be able to create a solution that I could just hand somebody and it works without them doing anything. But I live in the real world where human behavior, if you're looking to change behaviors and close a behavior gap, it's going to require some touching by the organization. It's going to require somebody championing the thing at the top and then at every level for it to go. So if somebody just wants to buy it and never touch it, I guess that's okay. But if I'm engaged and working with your organization, well, then we're going to do it. So
for those people that are listening that sell B2B, they're selling into companies, essentially what you're doing, no matter what they're selling, do you have experience or times where you've created some champions out of nothing? Like maybe somebody there was interested and you were able to get it to flourish where champions came instead of like coming to you as champions, you made them into champions and it was successful? Or do they have to just like come open and ready to go?
No, certainly. I've got a lot of examples of organizations using the tool. So in this example, implementing Money Alignment Academy at their company, and then they'll take the courses or go through some of the community resources and start to innovate and find new ways to implement it that I hadn't thought about. And so for sure, people will get excited about whatever it is. Particularly, a couple of good examples are people that have been able to get out of credit card debt using the program. And then that's obviously extremely powerful in some of these examples. Potentially life-changing, just feeling like they're in charge of their finances and they're out from under, again, a bunch of credit card debt, and then they definitely become champions. So yes, I think that that is certainly a very viable thing. And more often than not, the people that you think going in that are going to be the people that really drive it aren't necessarily. I mean, sometimes my entry point into a company is the president or the CEO, and sometimes it's the chief financial officer, sometimes it's an HR champion or leader. So I really never know exactly who's going to be driving it.
Got it. I love it. And I could totally see that being the case. Since you're dealing with businesses, you essentially can see this cross-section of a lot of different places out there. Ones that hire you and bring you on board with your product and services, the ones that say no and aren't open to it. What do you see that companies are doing well? Let's be specific. In 2020, companies that are doing things well, what are they doing well? If you have an insight into their sales side or just their business practices, what's working?
So what's working for organizations on the sales side?
Or in general that you're working with? What are the ones that you see that seem to be succeeding in this time? What are they doing well, like your clients?
So one that really comes to mind, it's a function and a byproduct of being super intentional about things. And an organization, what they wanted to do is they recognized that it does make sense to take an integrated approach to employee benefits or whatever their wellness program is. And so they had, just a couple of weeks ago, they called it a season of wellness and a week-long period where they brought in professionals on a week or a daily basis, I think, talk about physical health. It was like a I don't know specifically what it was that they brought in, but let's just assume that it was maybe an online yoga class that everybody could take. And they brought in somebody to talk about meal prep. And then I did a presentation on Wednesday talking about just financial fundamentals. And then on Thursday and Friday, I think I talked to like 22 of their employees in 30-minute segments, which was a lot. But it was awesome because everybody was super engaged and excited to be having a conversation with somebody that they knew didn't have a profit motive because the company just paid me to come in and do it. So I'm not there soliciting product or investment advice or anything like that. And again, everybody was engaged because they really saw it as, I've never been at a company before that has dedicated the financial resources and then given me the time during the work week to be able to take advantage of this kind of stuff. So everybody that I talked to was certainly grateful to have the opportunity. And that was even at the end of the week. So I'm sure that on Monday and Tuesday, they were also equally invigorated.
I think that's great. And what do you see the companies that aren't doing so well, or it seems like they're not in a successful path? What do you think they struggle with? And or what advice would you have for them? I guess is probably the better way to put it.
For so many companies right now, they do not have the resources to be devoting to anything other than mission critical stuff. And I totally get it. So I'm not going to say that companies that are trying to keep their heads above water or the lights on, that they need to be thinking about extra nice to haves like a week of wellness. But certainly there's a lot of companies and a lot of my clients right now that are in that situation where it's just, okay, we've had to let people go or really struggling with those foundational things. So it's tough for them, obviously, in times like these. I've certainly seen a lot of that. It certainly doesn't mean that they don't care about their employees. It's just that they don't have the resources or they're understaffed and not able to be super proactive or intentional right now.
And for me, there's four levels that I heard about a long time ago. There's survival, stability, success, and significance. And those are four hierarchies that you move through theoretically and potentially. For most people, especially in a time right now, stability would be nice. A lot of people are in survival mode, right? Like, I don't even know how I'm going to survive. I don't know how I'm going to pay my bills. I don't know how I'm going to make it. And people get into that. Sometimes you're in stability and you want success, but you're just trying to stay afloat and one paycheck away from something going sideways or one health issue. And then what you're talking about is the same thing for companies too, right? So there's some companies who are focused on success, which to them means that week of wellness and these kind of programs to keep that going. Some are just trying to stay stable. Some are surviving, right? They've got to trim here and there just to make it to the next year, the next month, and then they can regrow. So I think that's always important. And there's a balance too, because when you're stuck in survival, it's tough to think about anything other than getting out of survival, get to stability. Some of the things that might help you get there could be what you're talking about. And so sometimes it's tough to have that balance of here and then where you want to get to.
Totally agree. And that's all the time, right? That's not just during COVID. Well, I don't know if it was a mistake or not, but I had the experience a couple of years ago of trying to do this kind of work for nonprofit organizations. I thought, well, this is going to be great. This is an underserved market. They don't have a lot of resources, but they certainly need it. But I learned that they don't have a lot of resources. And that also means that they don't have a lot of time or extra attention or extra bandwidth to be able to be implementing programs like what I'm doing. So there's a lesson for all salespeople. If they've not discovered it yet, they certainly will, that we all need to do a good job of qualifying our prospect and making sure that the people that we're calling on are in fact legitimate and good prospects.
And that's a great reminder. I bring it up a lot in my conversations, is that what might seem like a good client to have, or you need the client, or maybe you think it's, in your case, a right direction to go with nonprofits and underserved group of businesses and organizations, or it's just desperation to close the deal or get the sale and might not be a good fit, but you need the deal for one reason or another. Generally, the challenge is that might work short term, but then you have this client and it's not going to be a good fit and it's not something good long term for the organization. Sometimes the sales rep benefits from it short term, but it's not good long term. So I think that's why I asked you earlier about who's not a good fit for you, because I wrote about that in my book, but I think a lot of times people don't focus on that enough, which is who's just not going to work? Who can I not? And like you said, come from a place of abundance instead.
Yeah, and that's certainly a bit of a shift, right? Because at some level, I have the ability to work with everybody, but that's not the correct answer to the question.
No, and I have that same challenge as well, right? So every organization, I'm every person who sells anything to anybody, which is probably a fair amount of people on the planet. So let's shift a little bit. What does it mean to you to be authentic?
What it means to me to be authentic, it means acting the way that I act with my friends and my kids, my wife, my clients, and my prospects the same way, at least as close to that as I possibly can. It means saying what I think and not being super afraid of ruffling feathers or offending somebody. So just being trying to be congruent and the same person across every different, I guess, level of life or different interaction or just with different groups.
Got it. One of the things I know that you're successful at, based on my own experience of you, obviously I'm not watching you sell or not watching you in any business type things, but just my experience, is forming relationships, creating relationships. What do you think is the key for you? Anything special that you do in that that makes that successful, whether it's business or going that way or not?
Yeah, I think that being able to give somebody your undivided attention is one of the greatest gifts that you can give somebody. And so I endeavor to do that as much as I possibly can and to really be present with somebody. And I think that's maybe a throwaway term these days, but never more important in a time where we have the ability to multitask and screw around on our phones and that our attention can go in a million different ways or places. If I can give somebody my, again, 100% undivided attention and really be there with them in the time that we have together, I think that's an amazing thing. I think that that's helped me to create good relationships.
I love it. And I agree. I think that that's not done enough, especially in communications, time when you're chatting with someone, meeting with someone, talking to them. I must say that's one of the reasons I really like Zoom, let's say over phone calls or video over phone calls, is because you can see the person, right? And there's a little bit different accountability to be present and not multitask like you want to do over a phone call. So when you hear the word persuasion, what does that mean to you?
I think about moving somebody from one place to the next. So having influence on them to make some kind of a positive change.
In everything that you've done or seen, especially with all the salespeople you've seen, is there a specific mindset or trait or anything like that that you think helps someone become a successful salesperson or persuader?
Certainly, yes. I think that the people that I respect the most and that when I interact and watch them in sales situations, it's that they're very frank and forthright with people. And that the answer is not absolutely, not always yes, because that drives me crazy, those sales words. Absolutely. Yeah, of course. Because that's not the answer. And people don't want to hear that. The right. Answer is not always yes. It's not absolutely. The answer a lot of the time is no. Or, you know what, I'm not sure, but I'll certainly find out. So just being forthright, honest, and upfront with people, that's what I've found and seen to make somebody an effective salesperson.
I love it. Shifting a little bit, what was it that you wanted to be when you grew up, when you were a kid?
I should have an answer to that question. I just wanted to be somebody and still want to be somebody who is respected, somebody who is having a positive impact on those around them. So that's the best answer to that question.
I love it. And if it helps, I can totally relate to that. If someone were to ask me that question, I have no idea. I have no idea what I wanted to be as a kid. I just wanted to make it through. My childhood went from a dinosaur phase into a shark phase, which then led to going to school and getting to green marine biology. But I, even with that, I had no specific plan. I wasn't like, okay, I'm going to go do this and be this person. I was a dinosaur, a leaf in the wind, even as a kid.
Dinosaur phase and a shark phase sounds pretty legit. So it sounds
yeah,
like
man, that's pretty right. Cool. But I didn't know what I wanted to do with it. I just wanted to do it. It was cool. But so it's fair. I do appreciate your answer because I can relate to that. Now, obviously, at this point in your life, you've created a lot. You've gone a different direction. You're shifted and made something that you're helping other people, serving other people. you have your family, you have all these things going on. What is your personal definition of success?
Well, I find myself to be a successful person now. I definitely consider myself to be successful. So being able to create my own success on my own, to be able to create the impact, to be able to create the influence that I've been able to create and that I continue to be able to do, and to be a person of substance and of influence in the lives of those people that are closest to me and my loved ones and also my community, that is really what I view to be successful, or for me, how I gauge whether or not I'm enjoying success and being a successful person is that.
Totally appreciate that. I think that's great. Last question, the journey or the destination?
That's the journey for sure. I mean, because as soon as I'm getting closer to something, then I'm either expanding it or I'm adding something else to it. So I can't imagine I'm ever going to be wherever there is. Or once I'm there, then it's going to where I'm again wanting to go. So
yeah. Once you get there, then you're going to see a new there, or the there is going to be a different one for the next part.
Yeah. And besides, Jason, what would I do once I was at that destination? I mean, come on. I would just drink beer and eat pizza and get fat and lazy, and nobody wants a fat and lazy George Grombacher. So,
well, I don't know. We don't know yet. If maybe we do.
It'd be totally great.
You never know. So, George, for people listening, one of the best things I know is your Money Savage podcast, which is absolutely great. I think that one's a great one. And again, not just because I've been on it twice, but I think it's truly amazing. The wide range of guests that you have, the number of episodes, amazing. It's available on iTunes, just anywhere you get your podcast, Money Savage podcast. And then you have your moneyalignmentacademy.com, which is where they can find you, your programs, the things that you offer for your clients. And then real briefly, talk about your Strive Online Bootcamp, which is something I love that you're putting on.
Yeah, I appreciate that. So this whole idea of wanting to give people what they need by giving them what they want. If I were just to show up to my clients and talk about 401k all the time, or to talk about budgeting all the time, then I would drive myself crazy and I would drive them crazy as well. And so I discovered that I think that real change happens when you take great information and then marry it with a supportive community, which is one of the main reasons that I enjoy working with organizations, because they already have that community built in. And so I thought, okay, the most valuable things we have are our time, our attention, and our money. And so how can I help people become better stewards of those three things? And I thought, okay, well, I think a boot camp could be cool. And so over the years of just working on it, that's really what birthed Strive. So it's a 2-week online boot camp that endeavors to detox your mind, your body, and your money. So during that 2-week period, it's an incredibly interactive thing where you exercise every day, you meal prep, you use the envelope budgeting system, you practice gratitude and affirmations, do all kinds of cool stuff. And it's been great for organizations to take and implement and make their own, because there's so many different ways that we're struggling to have community, especially these days. So it's something that can be done virtually. In fact, it is done virtually. And I found that employer groups or groups of employees, companies, really sink their teeth into it and get a lot out of it. So they're getting some good financial tools out of it, but at the same time, talking about what's most important to them, stuff like that. So,
love it. I think that's so good. I think those detox type of challenges are so important, just kind of a good reset. And those three categories you're focused on, super important. George, thanks for being on the Authentic Persuasion Show. Thanks for sharing all of this with me and talking about your journey in the sales and business. And I appreciate everything you're doing and you sharing this with the audience. So thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me, Jason.
Thanks for tuning into the Authentic Persuasion Show. If you found value in this episode, please do two things. Subscribe so you can get each new episode, and share this episode with anyone else you know in sales. Together, we can help shift the way sales is done. And if you want to find out more information about how to transform your sales career, or you want help with shifting your sales team from order takers to quota breakers, go to jasoncutter.com. Don't forget that everything in life is sales, and I will catch you on the next episode of the Authentic Persuasion Show.